Today, Samsung put millions of customers on hold. The company stopped all sales and exchanges of the Galaxy Note 7.
Industry analysts say suspending sales of this model could cost Samsung $630 million this quarter alone.
Indigenous People's Day is about recognizing our true nature, all of us, regardless of, you know, our background and our history and where we stand today and how we can be responsible to make sure that we pass on healthy lineages for future generations.
The mayor has the power to avert a strike. And none of us here want to see a strike. But we also know that the teachers are fighting for what's best for our children. And the mayor is holding up a settlement.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10, and it is Tuesday. It is the 11th of October, 2016, 5:10. Good morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. Lots to cover today. First and foremost, it is a school day in Chicago. Chicago Public Schools will be in session today after teachers and the school district reached a contract late last night, averting a teacher strike for more than 400,000 students in Chicago. So if you have youngsters who are thinking today would be a day off, get them out of bed. They have to go to school. Also today, well, the champagne is still on ice. We're waiting for the Cubs. The Cubs did not do it last night in San Francisco, but they can do it tonight. Dave Ennett will be along all morning long with wrap-up of what happened last night. First, let's get to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. You heard Vic give you some of the snapshot of what's happening this morning, but Dow futures are off 31 points as we coast to the opening bell this morning. Could be a weak opening. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Generally, a mixed night in Europe with the DAX and CAC leading the way. Overseas, the FTSE close behind. In Asia, overnight mixed numbers as well. Again, Dow futures pointing toward a lower open this morning on Wall Street. Will they or won't they? That's been the big question lately about the Federal Reserve. Indications are that the Fed is gearing up for an interest rate hike before the end of the year. I know we've been saying that. Sounds like a broken record. Yesterday, the Chicago Federal Reserve president was in Australia delivering a speech. He sounded as well, like many of the others, on the rubber chicken circuit, as we like to call it, as Paul Nolte likes to call it, sounding the alarm, or at least to getting people ready for a possible rate increase. And we were wondering, you know, what is the history of this organization, America's Bank? It's the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States. Roger Lowenstein is the author of a best-selling book now about this, called America's Bank, and he is a reporter and author. He's with us this morning. We're very happy to have him. Good morning, Roger. Thank you for joining us.
Steve, good morning. Great to be on the show.
You know, I love the book because there's, you know, we talk a lot about the Federal Reserve, and it seems lately it's not a day goes by. We don't say, are they, won't they, will they, won't they? And we'll get some minutes, I guess, this week, and we're cruising to a November meeting. Give us a little history about this organization. Why should we care about them, and why is it so important?
Well, Steve, we've seen even in the recent campaign with some of the things, particularly that Donald Trump has said, it's not a very popular organization. People like to hit on the big bank, the central bank. Actually, for this reason, for about since the revolution, with brief interruptions for 100 years, we didn't have a central bank in this country. And this book is a story of actually how we fared without it. And the answer is we had frequent recessions, frequent so-called money panics, frequent depressions. And the easiest way to think about the central bank is that when nobody wants to lend, when everybody's running one way, every bank is hunkering down, pulling down its loans because it's one of those periods, someone's got to lean against the wind and start lending. You know, and that's, like it or not, someone had to do that in 2008, and the Fed did that, which is why we've been growing, albeit slowly, we've been growing for 7 years now, the economy. Back in the 19th century, we didn't have one, and there was a tremendous battle between sort of the Tea Party types of the day who said, we don't want a government organization controlling the finances, organizing finances, and people said, are you kidding? Every bank in this country is keeping their own reserves in their own vault drawer, in their own top drawer. That's no way to run a modern economy. And Woodrow Wilson finally brought the country around to form one, and we've we've really seen a slow motion experiment of that in our own day. Because if you look at Europe, if you look at England, they have had far less assertive and aggressive central banks since the big recent crash. And obviously America's, you know, done much better than they have, because we've had the aggressive Fed doing its job.
We'll get into more of the history of this in a moment, but I want to ask you this. What if we didn't have the Fed today? What do you think would be the situation? You've sort of alluded to it, but so many different people with so many different ideas and so many backgrounds with economics, would it be just a free-for-all?
The Fed is the lender of last resort. But you have to think about what that phrase means for an individual bank. Every bank knows, you know, if they're tight, If people start calling their own loans and they're short of cash, they can go to that lender of last resort and borrow. They can borrow overnight. They can maintain that loan. Sometimes their balances with the Fed are high. Sometimes they're low. But that's a great thing on a bank's psychology. It means that it doesn't have to be quite as tight in its own lending, because it knows that it does have a lender of last resort if it needs one. However, if you're running a bank, whether it's in Chicago or St. Louis, and these examples are throughout the history of my book, in Texas, and you know there is no lender of last resort, any time you think that there's a possibility that money's going to get tight, you pull in your own loans and start lending. I mean, in the examples in this book, every fall, for instance, banks knew that they'd need cash in the countryside. Cash would drain out of the cities, and rates in New York, Chicago, Philadelphia would soar up to 80, 90, 100%, because banks had to protect themselves. They had to just hang on to the cash they had. There was no Fed. Therefore, they couldn't lend it out. There was no money. And interest rates would go to the sky. It took actually a foreigner, an immigrant from Germany, a banker named Paul Warburg, to say, "You guys are crazy. You guys are living through a problem that actually, in this case, we in Europe have solved." You know, we just like the way you have a national army, you don't have every soldier marching to their own, like their own general. You have a unified command. We have a unified command of our banking system. I mean, it took 10 years of lobbying, but it really took a tremendous depression in 1907. And when you talk about bank runs, I'm not talking about the way we experience them today with red lines on a computer screen. I mean people running down the block because they knew that if they didn't get to the teller window before the bank ran out of cash, their savings were gone. And finally, when this happened, even then, it took years of debate and a secret mission, which I talk about in the book, to Jekyll Island, where some of the bankers, they were so hated they couldn't show their faces in public, but they went down to map out a rough draft of what this bill would look like.
America's Bank, the epic struggle to create the Federal Reserve. On the WGN Associated Best Market Desk for the morning, here are some local stocks of interest. We're watching McDonald's this morning up almost 1%. Mondelez International is up almost 1% pre-market, pre-trading as well. And United is doing well today among our leaders, up about 2.5%. And now this from ABC.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian shares meandered today while South Korea's benchmark fell following reports of fresh problems with Samsung's Galaxy Note 7 phone. More of the phones have gone up in smoke, the company telling customers to turn their phones off immediately and asking retailers not to sell them. This comes as the replacement phones Samsung provided started catching fire. This is a nightmare for Samsung because they were a company that was challenging Apple here in the U.S. This was supposed to be the phone that would help Samsung gain, not lose, market share. On Wall Street Monday, the Dow rose about 89 points. The S&P gained 9 points. Some heavy hitters in Nevada's casino industry are going to bat for a project backed by one of their competitors, saying a proposed NFL stadium and a convention center expansion in Las Vegas would be game-changing. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
522, welcome back to the program. Get your kids up, get them off to school. Again, Chicago teachers in the school district have reached a contract agreement. There will be classes in Chicago today. Our pre-dawn business conversation this morning, Roger Lowenstein with us, the author of America's Bank, about the Federal Reserve Bank. Roger, you know, the history of this bank is it's very interesting to read how it developed. Do you see things, maybe history repeating itself a little as the central bank then sort of went through a lot of changes and as it became more modern? Are we headed in another direction too, where we've added this global perspective now?
Well, Steve, I see one thing, the tendency among many Americans and people elsewhere around the world to blame the central bank if things don't go exactly right. You know, you've seen one of the candidates, Donald Trump, sniping at Janet Yellen. We've seen that, you remember the last election cycle, Rick Perry said Ben Bernanke ought to watch out if he comes down in Texas, things could get ugly. The Fed is actually the least popular a federal agency. It's surpassed even the IRS, believe it or not. And this, it can be worrisome because the Fed can begin to get too cautious and afraid of you know, what the public opinion is. You alluded to this, the top of the hour, will they raise rates or not? It's difficult politically, I know, to do it in election season. But I really think, to put my two cents in, that they've got to do what's right for the economy and forget the election either way. Paul Volcker did this famously in 1980 when President Carter was running against Reagan. It certainly hurt Carter's re-election chances. But, you know, some way that's the way the cookie crumbles. They've got to act on what they see are the facts of the matter, irrespective of the politics.
As somebody who's now researched this quite extensively, your insight is very important. Do you think they've lost credibility, as some investors say that the Federal Reserve has, because they have not raised interest rates as they said they're going to?
Yes, I don't think it's a factor of politics. This has been, you know, the policy now for low rates for a very long time, right, since 2009, far in advance, obviously, of this election cycle. But just the fact that there's been such a prolonged period of, you know, will there be one hike this term? You know, will there be this year? Will there be two? You know, will it delay into next year? And we see the various Federal Reserve Board members playing out their, you know, private agonies in public, so to speak. I think at a certain point, any institution has to, you know, has to march in one direction and take a step. And it is, I think, discouraging to the public to be on this seesaw. I think Janet Yellen has got to make up her mind and go with it, because one thing the public wants, we know that, or doesn't. One thing it doesn't want is uncertainty, and she's been creating an awful lot of it.
So from the history of the pages of this book, which again are Amazing America's Bank is the name of it, give us a sense of what could be the alternative to people who say, well, we should get rid of the Federal Reserve Bank, we should make changes, we should get rid of them, basically. Give us a sense of what might happen if that were the case.
Well, in 1907, you know, we had no lender of last resort. There was a problems actually with a very small bank, a trust in New York. There was a panic at this small little institution. Turned out that a couple of the directors in this institution were directors at other banks, so people in those banks figured they should take their money out. Within 48 hours of this, there was a steamroller effect where virtually every bank in New York had long lines of people withdrawing their money. J.P. Morgan, the most eminent bank of his day, was rushed up from Virginia, rail car, where he was at an Episcopal convention to try to staunch the bleeding. By then, the city's banks were in virtual shutdown. And this spread one city to the next. Because there was no national banking organization, you couldn't even, if you had a debt in Philadelphia and you were in New York, you couldn't get currency from one city to another. Each banks in each city began to issue private homemade script, monopoly money, if you will, that would circulate in their communities because there was no cash. This is just, as I said, monopoly money. We went into New York City had to be bailed out. There were business slowed down drastically in this recession. And the country was in chaos for months as J.P. Morgan, this septuagenarian financier, did his best to play the role of what we now think is a central bank. Of course, he was a private banker. He made loans. He came to the country's rescue. Then, sort of a familiar story, people turned on him and said, "That was your fault," which was really unfair. But there was a big debate about whether or not this new central bank organization that they were drafting should be public or private. And in the thinking of that day, we didn't have all these federal agencies. They were going to have private bankers run it. And it took Louis Brandeis to tell Woodrow Wilson, "No, you can't do it that way. This is too important for the country. You've got to have publicly appointed public servants serving the Federal Reserve Board." And this was a late change to the bill. And that's why today, you have the president appointing the Federal Reserve Board members, Janet Yellen and all the others, and it's a public institution.
Roger Lowenstein, a former reporter, a Wall Street Journal reporter, also the author of a couple of other books, Buffett, The Making of an American Capitalist. This book is the best, though. I have to say, halfway through it right now, Roger Lowenstein, the author of America's Bank, The Epic Struggle, A Struggle to Create the Federal Reserve. It's available from Penguin Books. Mr. Lowenstein, thanks for being with us this morning.
Great talking to you, and go Cubs.
All right, yes, absolutely.
From ABC News, TechTrends. It's kind of a set-it-and-forget-it approach to philanthropy. Most people want to donate to charities, but get caught up in their daily lives without a thought for giving to their causes, says Lena Padidar. She's co-founder and CEO of CoinUp, an app that lets you donate whatever virtual spare change you have.
Where they're not having to really think about it. They can set it once, and it's ongoing monthly revenues for the charities.
It works by letting users first choose a charity. Then each time a credit or debit card purchase is made, the app will round up the total to the nearest dollar.
So, for instance, if you go and have a cup of coffee at Starbucks or you go to the dry cleaner, if you spend $10.75, the additional 25 cents rounded up to the next dollar gets added up.
Then, at the end of the month, the money is added up and donated. And Padidar says CoinUp uses a safe and secure bank and an approved and encrypted technology platform. It's currently available for iOS. An Android version will be out soon. With TechTrends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. 540 now as we move into the second half of our Tuesday show. The jobs report for the last month came in pretty decent, showing continued signs that the job market is solid. But there is some concern about weakness, especially in manufacturing. And while many of us are still worried about Election Day, a lot of people on Wall Street have moved beyond Election Day, and they're thinking about what's coming for the rest of the year. A rate hike, perhaps. Also, what's going to be happening with stocks, earnings coming up. We thought we'd bring in Mark Hamrick today. He's with Bankrate.com. He's with us this morning to talk a little bit about this, have a conversation. Mark, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning from the land of the Washington Nationals.
Yes, well, you know, we're here in the we have the champagne on ice. Hopefully it'll happen before the end of the week.
There's a lot of good karma pulling for you guys, so let's see how it goes.
Well, we appreciate that. What about the karma on Wall Street these days? Is it looking like maybe November could be a live meeting for the Fed?
Oh, I don't think so, to the extent that there's a realistic prospect of a rate hike in November. But Chair Yellen will tell us all that every meeting is live, to the extent that nothing is supposedly baked in the cake ahead of time. But the Fed also has a way of, showing its hand before it does certain things. And just this past weekend, Vice Chair Stan Fisher delivered a speech in which he was really, again, teeing it up for what I think will be a December rate hike. And, you know, we just published our Market Mavens survey at Bankrate, which is a quarterly survey of financial markets professionals. And by a 4-to-1 margin, December was the choice for them as well, when they think the Fed will next be raising interest rates.
And this seems to be the sentiment. We got two from Charles Evans, who was in Australia yesterday. The Fed president from Chicago gave a speech. So let's go back to the jobs report, if we could, Mark, because it was a strong report, but there seems to be a little bit of concern about the weakness in manufacturing. What was your take on that?
I don't think I was using the word strong. I think I was using something more along the lines of respectable, or a word that you used earlier, decent. But, you know, this recovery is 7 years in at this point. And I don't know about you, but I don't run as fast as I did when I was younger. So there are aspects of the job market, in contrast to what's happening in manufacturing, which are tight. In other words, there are certain sectors where qualified workers are not as easily found as they were before. There are a lot of people who are lacking skills in this country who could be employed if we were able to get them trained, and that's part of the problem. But I think that as long as we don't have a recession on our hands, and there's nothing pointing to that at the moment, we'll probably continue to have this kind of slower growth in employment. We won't have as many jobs added in 2016 as we did last year, but we're probably still going to keep the unemployment rate at 5% or below, and that would normally be seen as a fairly healthy job market.
When we hear Federal Reserve folks like Charles Evans and others say that they believe the U.S. is at full employment, what does that mean for the average person on the street, you and me?
That means that there probably is not going to be a lot more progress in employment, let's say, as measured by the unemployment rate. So the unemployment rate is not a perfect instrument for judging, let's say, what's happening with the economy or the job market, but it's about as good as it gets. And so, you know, can we get down to 3% unemployment? Probably not. And, you know, you mentioned manufacturing from the outset. You know, one of the big challenges for U.S. manufacturing is just the fact that the global economy is not performing well. It's consistently downgraded by, for example, the International Monetary Fund in the sense of the outlook. And, you know, we all participate in a global economy these days, and the U.S. manufacturing sector perhaps more so than most sectors. So to the extent that demand is relatively weak abroad, you know, that hurts everything from the financial sector to Boeing making commercial jet aircraft, apparel manufacturers, and on down the line.
The part of the jobs report was the wage aspect of it. Wages seem to be going up steadily, not as much as people, I'm sure, would like. But is that another positive sign as we move to the end of the year?
Well, we're slowly making progress there. And as you indicated, that has been probably the most subpar aspect of this economic recovery. But, you know, we did have a near-death experience with the U.S. economy in 2007-2008. And I personally believe that most people don't appreciate just how severe a situation that was. In other words, it was worse than what most people actually even believe. So, you know, the job market is at a level where we should be continuing to have further progress with wage gains. And we did have a data point, which I'm sure you've talked about over the last few weeks, from the Census Bureau that said that household incomes had made progress for the first time in about 7 or 8 years. And we hope that we can continue to do that, but there's still a ways to go. We're not back to where we were before with respect to all that. So there's more progress to be made. We want more progress. Many people need more progress urgently in this country. And I think there's every reason to believe that we can attain some of that as long as the economy doesn't fall out of bed. And even if we got some help from economies overseas, that would be a big help, too. What's interesting right now, you know, I heard in the newscast leading up here, crude oil is something that's moving right now because of OPEC's essentially tentative agreement. Maybe Russia's going to go along with production cuts as well. If that really does stick, that's going to be something to watch, because that could add an inflation component to the economy, not necessarily rampant inflation, but some inflation, which is one of the things the Federal Reserve has been looking for and hoping for, really.
We have just about a minute or so left, but I want to get your take on the election. I know I said that many on Wall Street have started looking beyond the election, but that really isn't the case. I mean, still there's some concern there, isn't there?
Well, I think, frankly, if Donald Trump were facing a let's say, a realistic prospect of being elected, having essentially repeatedly shot himself in the foot here, I think that would be viewed as potentially disruptive for the economy and financial markets. The Independent Center for Responsible Federal Budget says his proposals, if enacted, would add $5 trillion to an deficit, which is already expected to rise over the next decade. That's just one metric. But I think Hillary Clinton is seen as essentially consistent with the status quo. That's one reason why many people don't like her as a candidate. But for the economy and financial markets, uncertainty is the most toxic mix, and so she represents less uncertainty than Donald Trump does.
Mark Hamrick is Washington Bureau Chief for Bankrate.com, operating out of that beautiful National Press Building. He's actually the former, you're the former president of the National Press Club, right?
I am one of those, yes. I appreciate you mentioning it. It was a great honor in 2011. Thank you.
Well, it's great having you on. Good conversation with you this morning. You can find the fourth quarter Market Mavens report at Bankrate.com, and you can follow Mark, if you'd like, at HamRickisms on Twitter. Mark, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you, and go Cubs.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
5:52 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing toward opening losses, off about 23 points now. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Concerns about oil trading off a full percent almost this morning at $50.99 a barrel. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. About the brightest spot we could find in the agricultural market community yesterday, the wheat market. Wheat was up 2%. They blamed short covering and spillover strength from the crude oil market. As a matter of fact, the big jump in crude oil prices yesterday did help some of the agricultural commodities. And wheat led the advances on the trading floor, as we said, on fund short covering. Corn followed the firm trend, but soybeans, some pressure yesterday because of an active harvest weekend in the Midwest. So at the end of the day, wheat showed a gain of 9¾ cents a bushel, while corn gained 3¼, but soybeans, on the other hand, went down 3 cents a bushel. Not a bright story to start the week in the cattle trade. Once again, down limit as sell stops, fund liquidation came into the market, and it pushed October and December cattle contracts down the $3 limit. And that means today live cattle contracts will be trading with a daily limit of $4.50 a hundredweight. Other markets yesterday, feeder cattle came under pressure because of the live cattle market, and October live hogs decided to go the other way. Not much. Up a nickel, ending the day at $50.67. Tomorrow we'll get the October crop report, and today, a day late because of the government holiday yesterday, we will get the harvesting progress report. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. And here is your daybook today for October 11th. 2016, presented by Associated Bank. These are some of the stories and events happening today investors will be following. We'll be watching very closely as the Supreme Court begins hearing case Samsung Electronics versus Apple, where a design patent is applied to only a component of a product. Should be an award of infringers' profits be limited by those profits attributable to the component? It's a very complicated case, but one that could have implications elsewhere. You heard Orion there say the harvesting report will be out today from the Agriculture Department. As we look ahead to tomorrow, the Fed will release its latest minutes ahead of its November meeting, so we'll get a sense of where the Fed is thinking and what they're thinking in terms of interest rates. No major government reports due out today. That's your money for this morning. We'll continue following it as we head into the Steve Cochran Show. Again, Chicago teachers have reached a contract, so there will be school today. Get the young ones up and ready for school. We'll have more on that coming up, more on the Cubs as well. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of The Opening Bell.